Earlier this month, the Missouri History Museum unveiled a year-long exhibit on the region's history of racial injustice and the struggle for equal rights. It's titled Number One in Civil Rights, the African-American Freedom Struggle in St. Louis. The significance of the struggle here is enormous and often had an impact nationally, beginning even before the Dred Scott case, which began here, continuing up to and beyond events in Ferguson 2 years ago. Joining me to talk about some of that history and the exhibit documenting it are Gwen Moore, curator of Urban Landscape and Community for the Missouri History Museum. Percy Green is a longtime community activist and a participant in some of the region's most celebrated civil rights events. Thank you both so much for being with us once again. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
Gwen, let me start with you. I think a lot of people would be surprised to claim St. Louis as being number one in civil rights.
That is surprising, and it's a bold claim. But that bold claim came from Judge Nathan B. Young. Judge Nathan B. Young was the founder of the St. Louis American newspaper in 1928, one of the founders. And he was the editorial writer for the next 42 or so years, but he was also a keen researcher of local African-American history, and he made that claim repeatedly. Specifically, there was a reference to that in the September 22nd, 1964 bicentennial issue, where he has this banner headline, Number One City in Civil Rights, and he wrote this long article laying out his case, why he was saying it was the number one city in civil rights.
Well, if it's a long article, we can't do everything that he said, but what basically was he basically
thinking? Well, basically, at that time, in 1964, he said we had more civil rights cases go to the Supreme Court than any other city in the nation, possibly with the exception of New Orleans, with the slaughterhouse cases in 1872 and then Plessy versus Ferguson, but those were slaughterhouse cases were combined. At that time, he said we had three separate cases, civil rights cases that went to the Supreme Court. The Dred Scott decision, Dred and Harriet Scott sued for their freedom and went to the Supreme Court. The decision came down in 1857. Gaines versus Canada in 1938, in which Lloyd Gaines sued the University of Missouri because they would not admit him to the law school because he was a Negro. And then in 1948, Shelley versus Kramer, which was the restrictive covenant cases. So at that time, in 1964, it was three. And then in 1968, we had Jones versus Mayer. I got to get that right. He wrote another editorial saying, okay, our reputation is now firm because now we've had four cases go to the Supreme Court. That's more than any other city in the country. But he cited other events as well, but that was the basis of his argument.
Well, Percy Green, you had your own court case back in the day, didn't you, back in the 1960s?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's pretty much insignificant now in terms of the effectiveness, thanks to Supreme Court Judge Scalia. He was not the best person on civil rights, and as a result of the Green versus McDonald case, when it was
Douglas we're talking about.
McDonnell Douglas, yes.
Percy Green versus McDonnell Douglas,
yes. Well, at that particular time, there was an enormous number of people that was assisted with this by this case, and fairness was implemented. But now, from what I understand, is that it's hard to prove a case of racial discrimination now because of Justice Scalia kept chipping away at it, at the case, and now we're almost back to square one. We know racial discrimination exists, but now it's difficult to prove it.
You were claiming discriminated against by your employer, then employer.
That is correct. Yes. Yes.
Did you win the case?
Well, I won the portion academically, but I did not win the portion that would have caused me to be reinstated with back pay and front pay and promotions and things of that nature.
So it's a victory, but sort of a hollow victory.
Right.
I mean, it was
a victory in the sense that it made it possible to be able to prove racial discrimination. in employment. And of course, the case was utilized in other forms of racial discrimination. But the point was that we knew this racial discrimination exists, but you couldn't prove it. In my case, lack for a better word or phrase, it allowed a person who was a victim of such to be able to prove their case circumstantially.
We'll come back to that era in just a moment. But, Gwen, I want to come back to you with regard to, you know, everybody kind of cites the Dred and Harriet Scott case as kind of the start of St. Louis's involvement in the whole civil rights, racial injustice story. But it started before that in this area.
Well, according to George Young, he dates it to 1819, which is really going back. He said that the first civil rights demonstration on the continent happened in 1819 when free blacks and their white allies demonstrated on the steps of the old courthouse protesting the fact that Missouri was entering the Union as a slave state. So that's quite a claim.
And Missouri was in that funny position, geographical position, which
border
I guess,
state.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the reasons why there's so much activity here, I guess.
I think that has a lot to do with it. A lot of people refer to, well, Nathaniel Sweets called St. Louis. He called it up south, that as opposed
like uptown,
to down
right?
south.
Right.
You know, like this southern city in a northern state. That it was this a unique blend of North and South. We were a slave state, but we were in the Union. We had Jim Crow, but we didn't necessarily have Jim Crow laws. It was just a interesting state, and we were so close to Illinois, a free territory, which had a lot to do with how our civil rights struggle unfolded.
You mentioned something that I like to point to from time to time, and Percy and I think have had this conversation before, and that is you talk about white allies in these cases, and if you track a number of them, including Dred and Harriet Scott and certainly Shelley versus Kramer, the white community, some members of the white community, were very active in helping the cause, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of my favorite stories is the story of the freedom suits, because that was the 1807 territorial law that allowed enslaved people who thought or who said that they were enslaved unfairly to go to court and sue for their freedom. And then in 1824, there was a law passed that allowed them to, as paupers, to get a lawyer. These lawyers were white, of course. They went before an all-white jury, of course, white males. And as Judge Mason, who's an authority on this freedom suit, says, often they were slaveholders, and they went before a white judge. And I think we have 301 of those suits in the exhibit, and 116 of those unfairly or unjustly enslaved people were able to get their freedom. So that's quite a story to go, an enslaved person to go before this white, they had a white lawyer, white juries, white judge, and still won their freedom.
Yeah, and all of them had slaves also.
That's the irony. Like you said, a lot of them were slaveholders.
Including the judges.
Including the judges.
Well, nothing new there. The people who wrote the Constitution have founded the country all had slaves.
There we go.
That was just part of the deal. And Percy, it brings me to you because one of your most famous episodes during the 1960s, of course, was the climbing of the arch and your protest against employment there. But you had a white colleague who was
Richard Daley.
Richard Daley. Yeah. Tell us how you and he hooked up in this.
We were in an organization coming out of Jefferson Bank. You know, CORE was an interracial organization. And then, of course, I mean, the demonstrations, all of CORE's demonstrations were integrated. And, of course, the project at the courthouse, I mean, yeah, it was the National Park Service, but the courthouse was the main central office that—
For the construction.
For the construction of it, you know. And of course, organizationally, since we had, black and white members, and it was just a matter of us determining who was available and who was willing to do what when. And that's Daley stepped up to the plate because he was a student at the time. I was available during the day because I was working what was called the dead man shift at McDonnell Douglas, and that was from 12 to 7 in the morning. So during the day-like hours, then it made it possible for he and I to hook up and to execute it.
Right. And quite a significant amount of publicity that got.
Well, yes, that's true and interesting that the Attorney General for Kennedy at the time, you know, although we was arrested, he made it possible for all of the charges to be dropped. But since we were talking about, you know, white participants and everything, I just wanted to be known that one of my favorite whites, besides Daley and the members in CORE and also in action, is that of John Brown. I'm fascinated about the participation of John Brown in terms of eradicating slavery.
The John Brown.
Okay. Yes.
We're not talking about anything involved in.
Yeah. No, the John Brown.
Sure. You know. Well, I'll come back to that because there's some other things that we need to talk about. We have to take a break. Okay. We'll do that now. We are talking with Gwen Moore, curator of Urban Landscape and Community at the Missouri History Museum, which has just started an exhibit that will run until April of next year, I believe, correct?
Yes.
On civil rights history in the St. Louis region. Also with us is Percy Green, a longtime civil rights activist. We'll come back, continue that conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Gwen, back to you with regard to the stories that Percy can tell about his activity in the 50s and 60s. How are you treating that in the exhibit at the museum?
Oh, well, I mean, he's prominently featured. How could you not prominently feature Percy Green? He is a civil rights icon, and he has done so much for the city of St. Louis, and he's done so much for the country, not just the city of St. Louis. His influence spreads far beyond the borders of St. Louis and Missouri. So he's a very important person in the history of civil rights. I mean, he is civil rights.
How is the exhibit structured?
It's chronological. Uh-huh. So we do start with 1819, with what Judge Young said was the first demonstration, civil rights demonstration on the continent. And we started planning this in 2013. So our goal was to stop in 1968. Then, of course, 2014, Ferguson happened. We just could not let that go. We had to include that. So we do include Ferguson in this exhibit. So it ends with Ferguson.
In what way do you include it?
Well, I didn't want to offer a lot of interpretation, but I do think it's an important part of this story. And, in fact, we lay out the facts about what happened in Ferguson. And, in fact, we invite our visitors to contemplate Ferguson. What is the meaning of Ferguson? Is this part of this narrative, the civil rights narrative? Is it something different? And if so, you know, what is it? So we want people to ponder Ferguson and really think about it.
You see, Don, if I can add something here.
Course.
See, I saw Ferguson back in the day, you see. Mm-hmm. See, it's not uncommon for, in the city of St. Louis and perhaps metropolitan-wise, for a white policeman to kill black men. Mm-hmm. See, that's ongoing. I mean, I remember as far back in the early 60s, a young fellow by the name of Melvin Craven, I believe is his name, was handcuffed in the St. Louis Police Department, handcuffed behind him, was shot dead, was murdered. So the murdering of black men by white policemen has just been ongoing.
That's the worst manifestation
of the
tension, of the animosity, hostility, whatever you want to call
it. And that grows out of slavery. And we can trace that back to slavery, you know, as well.
But there are more benign, although obviously important, aspects of this. How many times have you ever been stopped while driving?
Well, I've been stopped more than I would like to like to accept. I mean, but numerically, I can't say. I mean, it's just something that happens.
But that the point is that this has been going on for a long time too, and a lot of people were surprised by Ferguson when they learned that this stuff was going on.
Well,
but
see,
you
that,
weren't surprised.
No, and I find it hard for many people to find to be surprised by it. It's just that all along it's been ignored. You know, I mean, it's just like right now. Look how many black men have been murdered by policemen, St. Louis policemen. And it's just the people seems to accept the excuses coming from the police department. You know, all of these lies that they tell, I would qualify most of them lies, claiming that the victim pointed a pistol at them. And then, of course, most people just accepted, well, if the police said that they pointed a pistol at them, then the policeman is rightfully, is correct in shooting them or killing them. But I refer to it as murder.
Yeah. Cell phones are changing that somewhat. I think that's true.
Yes.
Gwen, have you ever been stopped, just arbitrarily stopped?
Of course. Yeah. Yes. Yes, I've been stopped.
Recently?
Maybe last year.
Really?
Yeah.
So, you know.
So I think it happens to women, too. It's just not as, I don't think it's
not
as frequent.
Often, yeah.
Not as frequent.
Yeah.
No. You know, but yeah.
One of the things, again, going back to the exhibit, which is what we're here to talk about, although I'm fascinated by your own personal experiences, and I think people are interested in that as well, is the Jefferson Bank demonstration. Percy, you alluded to that a little while ago. That certainly has to be a part of what you have
at the
museum.
It's a big part of that. Margaret Bush Wilson, we quote her as saying that Jefferson Bank was a defining moment for the city of St. Louis. And, of course, it was the largest, the biggest, the longest civil rights demonstration in the history of the city. So, of course, it has to play a prominent role in this exhibit, and it does. And, of course, Percy Green was involved in that, too. So we keep going back to Percy Green.
Yeah. You know, one of the things about St. Louis that a lot of people point to, as you point out, Jefferson Bank demonstration was probably the biggest during that era, aside from some of the things that Percy was involved in individually. But other cities were blowing up. I think of Newark, and I think of Detroit, and I think of Baltimore, and many other cities. We didn't have that here. Is there any sense as to why not?
Well, I think it's just luck. The same ingredients, that caused these other places to explode, they exist here, and I just think it's just like anything else. You know, as many tornadoes that we've had throughout the country, I'm sure that there are some places still haven't had a tornado, but that doesn't mean that they didn't that the potential wasn't there. You know, so I just think that St. Louis basically. It wasn't anything on behalf of the white power structure that did that was supposed to be noble that is responsible for such. It just happened that it hadn't happened. And I guess we could qualify that saying yet, because, you know, we still have racism that is running pretty much rampant in very subtle ways.
Gwen, do you have any thoughts as to why?
You know, I think it's because we did have people like Percy Green, Bill Clay. Mm-hmm. We can go all the way back to these seasoned, respected, trusted civil rights leaders. I'll say even, you know, David Grant, Sidney Redman, Robert Witherspoon, the Oldhams, Margaret Bush Wilson. There were so many significant civil rights leaders in this city. And I think that they were known, respected. And they, you know, I always think about that 19...
you think so? You really do? You really think that we had...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, okay.
You're being modest. Yeah, people like Percy Green had a lot to do with that. I mean, Percy Green is one of the most respected civil rights leaders in this city. And we had people like Bill Clay, of course. I think he was important. Charles and Marion Oldham,
Norman Say.
Norman Say, absolutely. I always say Norman Say.
I mean, he certainly has been.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I noticed when, Percy, when you were talking about the situation today and young people being murdered by police and what have you, or shot by police, murder is your word.
Murder is my term.
Is your term. Yeah. You still have that fire still burning.
Oh, yes, very much so. Yeah. And see, you know, the interesting thing is that, you see, as I see it, Don, is that racism is still profitable in some manner. Either politically, economically, or socially. And it's not until efforts have been put forth to make racism a liability rather than an asset mm-hmm. before it's going to disappear. And I think that it has to be fought on all fronts, both black and whites. I mean, fair-minded whites or whatnot has to step up to the plate as well as blacks doing its fair share and push the establishment. And I think that the thing that we really have to come to grips with is this this murder, this justified murder incorporated that has been perpetrated by policemen, prosecuting attorneys, and judges as well as the city fathers.
We've only got a little over a minute left. I have a question here by phone that I can't take the call, but how is CORE and ACTION included in your exhibit?
Oh, well, CORE and ACTION are very prominently displayed in this exhibit.
It would have to be.
Such a long history. I mean, CORE from, 1948 with their activities. CORE and ACTION, very prominent civil rights organizations.
Again, because our time is winding down, you also, as part of the exhibit, you have live, kind of a theatrical aspect.
We do.
They're
called the activists. They're live actors who are portraying some of the leading figures of the civil rights movement, some known, some not known. People like Lucy Delaney, who had a freedom suit, Margaret Bush Wilson, George Vaughn, Charlton Tandy. Yes, and that's a very important feature of this exhibit, very exciting feature.
Well, once again, we'll point out that this is going to be continuing through April 15th of next year. Long-time exhibit and a very important one, too. I want to thank you, Gwen Moore, for being with us and for the work you've done to pull this together. Percy Green, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.